Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, brain masseur. Are you ready for your gray matter massage?
Truth, served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Paul Revere's lantern lighter here, lighting the lamps of the church belfry arch, singling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Polarization, the phenomenon of gridlock, the end game for the soul of America. I'll explain, but first, I'm noticing that moderates, those who like to play in the middle of the road, are having a difficult time whether they are R's or D's. Moderate Dems, so-called Blue Dog Democrats. By the way, some credit this moniker to Texas Representative Pete Guerin. He once complained that the Democrats had been, quote, choked blue, end quote, by the extremists on the left of the Democrat Party. However, others think it comes from the fact that this coalition of moderate to conservative Democrats met in Louisiana, which is the home of Cajun artist George Rodriguez, famous for his, quote, blue dog, end quote, paintings. Okay. But the explanation that makes most sense to me is the one cited by members of the Democrat Party who self-identify as blue dog Dems. Quote, when dogs are not let into the house, they stay outside in the cold and turn blue, end quote. Moderate Dems are getting pushed out or voted out. And by the way, the same thing is true of moderate Republicans like Murkowski in Alaska. The rhinos are getting run over. Rhino, by the way, is Republican in name only. Like the storming of Delaware's castle by Tea Party with O'Donnell. Well, we'll see where it all falls at the end of the day. But it looks like the Congress, at least, and possibly also the Senate, is going to be more polarized than ever, with the so-called far right and the far left entrenched in their respective foxholes, both dug in and determined to hold. Whichever side receives the greatest amount of artillery support, following the metaphor here, voters putting pressure on both houses of our Congress and the White House, which artillery fire will soften up the opposition of one side or the other, well, that's the side that's going to win. And will take the most ground in the upcoming term running into 2012. Think about it. However, what is going on right now goes beyond a mere purging of those perceived to be less than loyal to the cause of either the right or the left. I mean, you've got people like Barney Frank, that's a true dog Democrat, loaning his own campaign $200,000 of his own personal money because he knows he could lose his seat on November 2nd. Why is he having trouble? Well, Dick Morris says it is because, quote, he's the poster child for the mortgage mess and the housing collapse, end quote. Oh, yeah. And whatever you think of Mr. Morris, everyone agrees he is politically astute. The steam blowing from the Tea Party's pot is driving a steam engine that is barreling down the tracks toward Washington, loaded with enough nitro in its cargo to blow the place to smithereens. Oh, mercy. By the way, where is smithereens, you might ask? It so happens that the term comes from an Irish word, smitteren, which means pieces, ergo the expression means blown to bits. Speaking metaphorically, of course. Look at Boxer. I mean, she won with more than 60. I mean, actually, it was pretty close to 70% of the vote in her last election, and she has been in government for something like, what, 28 years or something like that? Yet newbie Fiorina has got her in a cold sweat watching her rearview mirror as Carly rides her bumper. And yet, what accounts for the current coming tsunami against progressivism is not only that middle-of-the-roaders are getting run over by radicals from both sides of the yellow line, or that there is a general lurch to the right as Tea Partiers rise up in force and pull hard against the agenda of the progressives. No, there's something more. And Dick Morris, astute in matters of politics, as we've said, made an offhanded observation that had more insight in it than I think he might realize. Applauding the effectiveness of his new TV ads, he says, quote, "When we started our Super PAC for America, no one was predicting that more than 50 Democrats would lose their seats in Congress. The influential Cook Political Report now predicts 60 or more. Some Washington insiders," he goes on to say, "are telling me that as many as 75 Democrats could be defeated and that a total of 113 Democrats are vulnerable." And then he goes on to say, "This is like a live auction. Do I hear a bid for 100? And finally, he takes all this and makes a direct appeal for more funds so he can ratchet up the pressure on the routed Dems. But he says something here that's very interesting. Quote, "The more you give, the more damaged trees we can chop down," end quote. Well, that's interesting. The more you give, the more, quote, "damaged trees we can chop down," end quote. Now, where did he get that metaphor? It's obvious that he is referring to the Lib Dems as damaged trees. I agree. Bible thump alert, Bible thump alert! In Psalm 1 and elsewhere, the Bible uses the tree as a metaphor for men. A corrupt tree would be a corrupt man. With that in mind, consider, behold, these 3 years, Jesus said, "I come seeking fruit on this fig tree and find none. Cut it down. Why cumbereth it the ground?" End quote. That's Luke 13:7. Last week I mentioned that for well over a year, my church has been praying these evil trees would be rooted out of the earth and cast into the sea. The sea, by the way, refers specifically to the cavity in the earth which is filled by the waters of the sea, and not to the waters directly. These waters are a reference to peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues, according to Revelation 17:15. So you see, we are praying these corrupt trees bearing their evil fruit, poisoning the land, making it sick with their perversities, will be rooted up and cast back into anonymity among the sea of the multitudes, where their influence may be diluted sufficiently to make them unable to destroy us. How interesting that Dick Morris would intuitively swerve into this metaphor. I think I'll take it as a token of divine encouragement. It's tree chopping time. November 2nd, I'll be right back. My dear friends and supporters of the Brain Massage Show, I've completed a new booklet I'm sure you will enjoy. It is titled Washington's Farewell, and it provides commentary on George Washington's farewell address and the advice in it that he gives to the nation. The advice our beloved Founding Father offered in his farewell address is exactly what we need today. With remarkable foresight, beloved George Washington saw the rise of party politics, and he warned us against its dangers. He foresaw what challenges would rise up against liberty in his beloved country, and he provided the roadmap that would guide us through such dark times. Washington's advice must be heeded, or our ship of state will surely sink. This booklet features something like, 20 portraits of Washington, including my own favorite. It offers 29 short, easy-to-read vignettes taken from his farewell address as published in John Frost's famous pictorial Life of George Washington. With the booklet, I'm also offering a CD that contains all 30 of the one-minute brain massages that I produced and aired on our radio stations titled Washington's Farewell. You'll want to set this by your bedside and read one of these vignettes each night for a month. You'll want to pass this on to your children or grandchildren. You'll want to introduce the real heart of George Washington to them and to your friends, by the way, especially some of your liberal friends. Everyone who aspires to public office ought to read this booklet and keep it handy as a reference guide. Let George Washington talk to you about what needs to be done today to straighten out the mess our country is in. Call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. And ask for your copy today. I'd appreciate a donation of any amount you'd like to give for the booklet and the CD. Now, if you want to make a donation, go to our website. That's www.thebrainmassageshow.com. And you know the drill, all one word and all that. Thebrainmassageshow.com. You'll be taken to the church's radio page, and you'll see a donate button there where you can donate a gift designated specifically to the Brain Massage Radio Show. Click on that button, and you can make your donation through PayPal. And make sure, of course, we have a shipping address. And for all donations of $5 or more, I'll see that you receive the booklet and the CD. Call 1-888-770-8000. Leave your shipping address if you want this offer, all right? I'd really like for you to have this. I'm sure you will appreciate receiving the advice of George Washington for America today.
Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, Brain Masseur, and I'm ready to complete your brain massage for today. It seems everyone is crying gridlock. Gridlock is being cast as public enemy number one. It's gridlock, you know, not progressive ideas that is messing up America, right? If you get your news from the left-wing media, a.k.a. MSM, you are led to think it's all of those right-wing nut Republicans that are causing the gridlock. The fact is the country is now almost evenly divided into left and right, and the division is deeper than differences over plan of action. The division goes to core principles that define our worldview. Now, I'm going to offer some insight to help you understand the phenomenon of gridlock, the polarization in American politics. A few years ago, I began warning whoever would listen as I hollered my loudest from my little corner of Whoville that the culture war was necessarily going to polarize the country more and more until finally this country would break and fall. Like a great tug of war, with the left pulling America in one direction and the right pulling America in exactly the opposite direction, until one side or the other must collapse, with the victorious side dragging the losers toward either the right or the left, depending on who wins this tug of war for America's soul. You see, it used to be that we all agreed on a destination for the country. We were all pulling in the same direction. We had different ideas about how to get there, but we all wanted the same things because we all, or at least the vast majority of us all, had a shared vision of what it means to be an American. This shared vision was built on the foundation of a shared set of values. What has happened is exactly what our first president, George Washington, feared would happen. Our unity would be targeted by the enemies of liberty who would foment party spirit until loyalties would be defined by one's commitment to the narrow interests of party rather than the broad interests of the country, by party politics rather than by love of country and commitment to good principles. Follow along, you'll find this interesting. Not so long ago, probably within the range of the memory of anyone hearing me who is over 50, and likely within the range of the memories of anyone over 40, virtually all Americans believed that family meant a husband and a wife, a husband of the male gender, wife of the female gender, committed to one another for life, with children who knew their father and their mother, with one set of grandparents from each side of the family who likewise remained married for life. Now, such is the wistful dream of those over 30, and probably considered to be something of a fantasy to many of those under 20, unless you grew up in such a home, in which case it is your expectation. The American dream was generally thought to be living with your family in a safe neighborhood with people who shared your values and beliefs, mutually supportive, in a neighborhood where the children could play outside, roaming about the neighborhood freely, trusting that your neighbor would watch out for your kid as you would watch out for theirs. You know, the nice house on a clean block with a white picket fence, that sort of thing. But seeds of rebellion against the fundamental values that supported and gave rise to that view of society were planted in our culture in the 20s, watered in the 30s and 40s, and then began blossoming in the 50s and 60s generations. Among the vain philosophies that literally attacked, and I mean aggressively in many instances, attacked directly the cherished beliefs and values that shaped that early American dream, what was the teaching of evolution to our kids as if it was science, and Marxism likewise taught as if it was a social science, based on evolution, by the way, and considered and taught as if it was axiomatic truth. Well, this undermined the values that supported that American dream. Christianity was aggressively assaulted in our universities, then in our high schools and in our grammar schools, finally openly in public. And this began surfacing in the 50s, by the way, when teens were cloistered into a separate subculture, growing more and more alienated from their parents' generation. You know, our kids at one time were taught that they should not trust anyone over, what was it, 30? And all of this began to eat away at anything like a shared national sense of values and traditions and beliefs. it was not too long before the parents began following the younger generation. Oh, yeah. It was absurd to watch, but what happened is parents bought into the idiotic notion that their kids were the future and that they were following their kids into the future. What? And some continue to believe this nonsense. Don't you understand that you are their future? And it's not the other way around. Go ahead and put your 12-year-old out in front of you and say, lead me, son, into the future. What nonsense? You have walked the paths they are yet to walk. You have been through the experiences they've yet to experience. You are their future, not the other way around. They're following you. And where are we leading them? So a new generation grew up without adult leadership, and for the most part, without adult supervision. Evil influences in society took full advantage of this and stepped in to take the place of parents as mentors for our kids. People like Mr. LSD himself, you know, Timothy Leary, all the various rock stars that became the dominant influence in the life of so many of our kids, with the drug culture further alienating our children from their parents and seducing them into behavior that corrupted their conscience and seduced them into philosophies that were a direct contradiction against the values and beliefs that in former generations served as that which we all held in common, the glue, if you will, that held us all together. And now we've had some resurgence of faith here and there along the way, some short little revivals in the 70s and so on, where we have some pockets in society that have returned to those basic traditions that we believed that in the past that glued us together. But the bottom line is, we no longer have a set of values that virtually all Americans identify with in common. In fact, most Americans are divided on issues that totally polarize us. And for that reason, what they call centrist today is the far left of yesterday. In other words, a moderate today represents as a centrist position things that only a few generations ago were considered extreme leftist wacko ideas. Here's the deal, folks. Those on the right have dug in and begun to say, no, 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 we're not going any further in that direction. In fact, we need to move back to the right. While the left is stubbornly holding on to the ground they've gained for the last 50 years and digging in their heels, unwilling to give up that ground. In this scenario, those in the middle are perceived as a threat to both the right and the left. You see, to the left, they represent a tendency to compromise away ground they have fought so hard to gain. To the right, they represent a capitulation to the radical left-wing ideology of the 60s and a tendency to keep pushing the country farther and farther to the left, compromising yet more ground to what we know will destroy this country. Now, both sides have dug in, folks, and the tug-of-war rope is taut and straining, and it's at a place now where you are either pulling right or pulling left, and those in the middle are going to get trampled. We are almost totally polarized right now. The values of the left are antithetical to those of the right. There is no middle ground on the issue of life. The left has not satisfied the question of when does a baby become a person, and the benefit of doubt is increasingly going to the infant in the womb. It is becoming more and more obvious that those who call themselves pro-choice have no argument to support their position as middle ground. Babies are being murdered in the womb, and no one with sense believes that is an issue of choice. There is no middle ground between homosexual agenda and the traditional values family. It doesn't exist. It's not a matter of tolerance, as the homosexual activists display zero tolerance for those of us who oppose homosexual behavior. On marriage, for example, they refuse to yield. We refuse to yield. We are at an impasse. There is no middle ground on this issue. We offered them domestic partnerships. Not good enough. They demand marriage. We say no. We are at war. A war over what values will define our culture. Either we will collapse into a culture of Antichrist hatred for traditional values Christians, where whores, homosexuals, pansexuality, pornography, vice of every kind will be accepted, even encouraged, complete with all the diseases that go along with all that, and Christians will be despised in such a culture, ridiculed and outcast, marginalized so they can't influence anything in culture or in politics, or we will revert to the dominance of Christian values where whores, homosexuals, pansexuals, pornography, vice of every kind will be despised and ridiculed and rejected in polite company and marginalized so their influence cannot dominate our culture. My point is one side will lose, the other side will win, period. There can be no win-win in this situation. We're past that. We're polarized. We are at war with ourselves. Yet some conservatives don't get it. The liberals, it seems in the main, they understand that it's a war for the soul of America, but many conservatives don't seem to understand that the problems are deeper than differences of opinion over economics. The differences over economics are profound. But listen, what divides us are differences that are even more profound. Listen, differences that serve as the foundation upon which our differences over economics is being fought. Listen to this. In other words, our battle over economics is being fought now on the battlefield of values that go deeper than differences over economics. Our battle over economy is fought on the ground of our battle over morality. There is a division at the soul level of Americans today. There are those who actually believe there is no truth, that everyone invents their own truth, that there is no right and wrong, only what works and what doesn't work. And these people are opposite, antithetical of those who believe in objective truth, who believe in moral absolutes. Our values compel us to view homosexuality and abortion as not mere alternate ways of looking at life or living, but destructive to life and living, contrary to life, perverse, threatening to social order. Those who pretend that homosexuality and abortion are mere alternatives, they lie. For they insist that we must pay for abortions with our tax dollars, and we must yield the institution of marriage to be co-opted by homosexuals. Don't you see this? In reality, we, the traditionalists, have actually, in truth, offered a truce. We have time and again made room for these perversities. I'm not suggesting we should have, but we have done that. We've said essentially only just let us alone, but they don't. They won't. Don't you understand? It is an axiomatic rule of reality that either the wicked will be ridiculed, ostracized, marginalized, and rejected in polite company, or the righteous surely will. What many Americans are beginning to understand, and hopefully not too late, is this. The wicked are an abomination to the righteous, and the righteous is an abomination to the wicked, period. They're not going to live at peace with one another. One will dominate the other. One will ridicule the other. One will marginalize the other. That is the way of life. These cannot walk together. They can't agree on anything because they are walking in opposite directions. It is no longer the case that Americans are all walking in the same direction, aiming for the same objective, and discussing the best path to get to a shared destination. No. Now Americans are divided between opposite directions. Opposite views of the right destination to take the country. It's now a fight not over which road to take to get to the same place. It's a fight over what place do we want to go? Where do we want America to be? Even what do we want America to be in 20 or 30 years? They envision an America that is in decline, that is absorbed into a global world order, humbled among the nations. They envision an America that is no longer one nation under God, but rather a nation of many gods, a pagan nation. They envision an America that has no shared moral values, except the shared idea that there are no absolute moral values by which others in society are judged, except we are judged by theirs, you see. Isn't that interesting? They envision a society that blends all faiths, all tastes, all cultures, all borders, all languages. They envision an America in which the American dream is government takes care of all human needs, making citizens free of need, free of care, free of the burdens of competition. Their idea of a just society is a society in which there is no competition, where no one excels over another. Wait, that hits the sports world. No one has any advantage over another. Egalitarianism carried to the extreme. It is a false vision, a dangerous illusion, one that encourages the vanity of supposing, for example, if only everyone will put down their guns, there would be peace, no more war. This is a dangerous illusion because it belies reality and refuses to acknowledge that evil men do exist in the world who are only too glad for us to lay down our arms so they can devour us. It is a dangerous illusion because it pretends that poverty, for example, is caused only by the greed of some others. But it's greed on the impoverished side that causes much of their poverty. It doesn't recognize that most poverty is the consequence of sloth and immorality of the impoverished. And more critically than anything else, it is dangerous because it gives to government the responsibility of God over people's lives, which necessarily yields to government the power of God over our personal lives, all our personal lives. While we, on the other hand, believe in American exceptionalism, that being American means having the freedom to make your own way in the world without someone assigning you to some class or occupation by your birth, where opportunity to become all you can become is jealously protected by your fellow citizens. But what you do with that is your responsibility, not the responsibility of your peers. We envision an America that enjoys shared values of hard work, honesty, and a commitment to a shared set of moral beliefs. As reflected in the Ten Commandments, for example, we envision an America in which all men are free to worship according to the dictates of their own conscience, but are not free to dictate that Christians are the exception to that. We believe in an America that is one nation under God, as Patrick Henry said, a nation not built on religion, but on the gospel of Jesus Christ, which is shaped by the values and beliefs of the Christian religion, in which sodomy is considered perverse, and abortion, murder, in which honesty is demanded, especially of public officials, where morality matters and character counts. And these things, morality and character, are understood in the traditional context of our Christian heritage. It is time to just go ahead and stand up and articulate clearly exactly what is our vision for America. Because this is our vision for America, a return to the values that shaped us in the first place. For too long, we have stood on the sidelines watching as these people have pulled us further and further from our heritage, lying about our heritage, corrupting our youth, perverting the conscience of our nation into accepting bizarre things like sodomy and abortion. And finally, we're waking up. And we're noticing that we've drifted far from our moorings, and that these people are pulling us into hell with them. And we are rising up and saying, whoa, hold on here. We've moved so far toward the left that now, listen, George Washington, Patrick Henry, Alexander Hamilton, and even the more liberally inclined Thomas Jefferson, all of these would be considered radical right-wing nuts today, extremists. Well, something's bad wrong, my friends. So when you vote this Tuesday, you remember what is at stake. You are going to the polls and you will pull left or you will pull right. You will give your full weight and strength to pull this nation in one direction or the other. All right, I gotta close. The New York Times, famous for bashing the Tea Party crowd, recently discovered at least part of the mystery behind the rise of the Tea Party movement. It's this: they read books written by dead guys. Oh, yeah. The New York Times has discovered that we Tea Partiers are literate. After all, only we reach to, quote, dusty bookshelves, end quote, for, quote, once obscure texts by dead writers, end quote. Well, anyway, the New York Times is correct. Tea Partiers are literate, and they do read books written by our founders who passed on. And here is an opportunity to take a fresh look at George Washington's farewell address. In that address, George Washington gives the advice we need for our country today. Would you be willing to listen to George Washington's advice to America today? Go to our website, which is thebrainmassageshow.com. All one word, lowercase, you know the drill. Thebrainmassageshow.com. You'll be taken to our church radio page. You'll see a donate button there. Click on it, and you can make your donation designated to the Brain Massage Radio Show, and you can use credit or debit card. Make sure I have your shipping address, and I'll send it out to you right away. Or you should get it within about a week. These are short and to-the-point vignettes from Washington's advice to his country upon leaving public office. Listen to Washington's advice to America. Call 1-888-770-8000 and leave your mailing address with your message, and the first 10 callers will receive the booklet and the CD in about a week. And if you happen not to be one of the first 10 callers, I'll call and let you know. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com, make a donation of at least $5, and you'll be encouraging a good cause and you'll allow me to send you this great resource. I hope you have enjoyed your brain massage today. Call in and let me know you see the lights are on. God bless you. God save America. I'll see you at the polls.